On February 27th, a report about erythritol was published. On February 28th, CNN ran the headline, "Zero-calorie sweetener linked to heart attack and stroke," study finds. And the masses went wild. Reports of the article were everywhere on social media, and a dozen or more folks, keto and not, posted a video in objection to the report, or at least the contents or procedures of the report. This episode is a response to that report and a response to the responses. There seems to be more in play than just the report and the critiques. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 234, Food and Freedom Once a Week for Life. Hello folks, Stan Reed here. Today we're taking a science-y turn. Now, I don't read medical type reports, but this was so much in the news, and erythritol is so much a part of the keto lifestyle that it seemed I could not ignore it. So, I'm not ignoring it. This past February, a report in Nature Medicine about erythritol was published. CNN had panic-inducing headlines about how this sugar substitute causes heart attacks. A cardiovascular event, they called it. An event. Like it's a thing to look forward to. Medical doublespeak, but that's another show. If you read the CNN article and are thinking about going keto, this could give you a moment to pause. It's not a bad thing to consider and reconsider a decision that has a large impact on your life. It is another matter when fear porn from the best there is paints only part of the picture. I saw the post about the study. There were some keto-type shows that responded to it, and that seemed a good start. I wanted to read the report for myself to see what they saw. So I got the report. Now, I'll admit, it was a struggle for me with all the language. I don't read scientific reports, and I don't speak doctor, so I was looking up a lot of the words. This is probably a good example of those kinds of reports. I'm sure there's a good reason they are incomprehensible to lay folk, but I don't know what that reason is. As I was reading it, one thing came to me was maybe I was too eager for the retorts to be what I wanted them to be, finding some errors and debunking this report. Maybe. Just maybe I was looking for confirmation that this report was just hooey. More than a few people have made a video or a podcast responding to parts of the report. Most of the responses I watched or listened to were from keto type folks. Nearly everyone had similar objections to some aspect of how the study was conducted. Consensus is a funny thing. It's useful at times and useless at other times. If the consensus is 99% of people asked say driving into traffic is a bad idea, I tend to agree with that. If the consensus is 97% of dietitians agree that sugar is a healthy food, I want to learn more about that seemingly impossible claim. The articles about this erythritol study I read and the podcasts I listened to or watched all cited some of the same issues from the report. So, as consensus, there's at least a place to start. Keto folks and diabetics and dieters may be more familiar with non-sugar sweeteners like erythritol. It isn't a sugar, but it is a sugar alcohol. Now, that sounds impressive and confusing. A confounding phrase, except it isn't a sugar and it isn't an alcohol, so what the heck is it? A quick bit about sugar alcohol and a disclaimer in reverse order in case my FBI guy is listening. I am not a doctor and I am not providing medical advice. No part of this podcast should be heard to be medical advice or diet or health advice. I make no claims to specialized knowledge. My opinion on these matters is just that, my opinion. So, sugar alcohols are carbohydrates with no or few calories, fewer than sugar, and that makes them an appeal to dieters. They aren't sugar, which is an appeal to diabetics. Sugar alcohols taste sweet on the sweet buds, and that is the appeal to just about all of us. The downside to some sugar alcohols is they are not all found in nature. Some, maybe most, are not fully digested. Now, I spoke with Jess Reed a few episodes ago, episode 222, about some of those replacements for sugar and how some of them can cause inflammation and bloating, and some can even disrupt bowel movements, causing a laxative effect. And you might be a bit windy, too. So, sugar alcohols are carbohydrates, but not sugar, and don't increase insulin too much. And this is an interesting point, but not for this show. Eating erythritol does stimulate insulin. Seems that eating anything at all stimulates insulin. Again, not for this show. The paper called erythritol an artificial sweetener, even though it is found in pears and watermelons and mushrooms and some fermented products like soy sauce. They call it artificial because in the quantities it is used commercially, it is a processed ingredient. That detail aside, the authors identify artificial sweeteners as safe, but also write correctly that little is known about the long-term side effects from them. That's a valid point. The long-term effects of table sugar seem well-known, or are they? That's another show. And that knowledge seems to be rejected. Mostly it's rejected by big sugar. I can steer you toward anecdotal evidence the next time you go grocery shopping. Look at the people, and look at their carts. What they are buying has a direct impact on what they look like. If you think there isn't an effect of eating Pop-Tarts and sugar bomb cereals and sodas and energy drinks and chips and dip, go people watching at your local food mart. Getting into prep for this show, I watched a few videos and these same points were brought up. Here are some concerns. Correlation is not causation. At no point in the study do the researchers identify a cause for the issues they found, which were the subjects had high levels of blood-level erythritol. It seems almost like they were looking at various human subjects susceptible to major adverse cardiovascular events and trying to find something, and they found erythritol. They didn't measure the dietary consumption of erythritol, only the erythritol in the bloodstream. This part gets interesting. Humans make erythritol through the metabolism of glucose. Most of the subjects in the study were overweight and in poor heart health. The authors even write as much. Quote, both cohorts were enrolled at quaternary referral centers with large catchment areas with high prevalence of cardiovascular disease and risk factor burden, including type 2 diabetes and obesity, end quote. The study does reveal the weakness. Quote, this study has several limitations. Measurement of erythritol in clinical cohort studies was only performed once as an overnight fasting level at the time of enrollment. Whether serial measures would provide enhanced prognostic value for incident cardiovascular disease risks remains unknown. Because patients in our observational cohorts were recruited at quaternary referral centers and show a high prevalence of cardiovascular disease and traditional risk factors, the translatability of our findings to the general population needs to be determined, end quote. They follow that comment with this, quote, another limitation of our clinical observational studies is that by design, these studies can only show association and not causation, end quote. Well, that's really the main gist of a lot of the complaints about this report. The Greenberg-Traurig website posted an article about the study as well. Part of their post is a discussion about potential legal action by the study participants and how manufacturers of erythritol and products which use erythritol might move forward. That's not the focus of the show. That same article did rewrite some of those limitations cited by the authors in human speak, and they read, quote, an overnight fasting level of erythritol was measured only once at enrollment, and the value of successive measurements for determining incident cardiovascular risks is unknown. The individuals followed in both cohorts had high prevalence of cardiovascular risk factors, such that it is unclear how the study's findings would translate to the general population. The cohort studies, by design, show only association, not a causal link, between erythritol and adverse cardiovascular events. Unmodeled confounding factors, such as diet, may have affected the study's results, end quote. Now, when I decided to take this on, I really set out to blast this report. It seemed easy enough, but it wasn't. What was impressive wasn't the report, but the response by the media to the report. This report came out on February 27th, 2023, and on February 28th, CNN had their article online. On January 1, of 2023, the National Library of Medicine published the article Erythritol, an in-depth discussion of its potential to be a beneficial dietary component. Their conclusion, in part, is that, quote, erythritol is a naturally occurring, safe, and non-nutritive sugar alcohol. Compared to other sugar alcohols, evidence from human studies indicate that it is mostly absorbed and excreted in urine unmetabolized. Minimal amounts reach the colon, therefore, it is better tolerated with less undesirable gastrointestinal effects, end quote. Now, anecdotally, I can offer that erythritol can have undesirable gastrointestinal effects. That's an interesting report, and from a quick search on the webs, I found zero hits about the news and that article. Nobody seemed to report on January 2nd about that article. That also seems interesting. Erythritol is made by the body when the body metabolizes glucose through a process called the pentose phosphate pathway, and it's there that erythritol is produced. I realized that was a circular sentence. What seems to be so is that more erythritol is produced in the body when the body has inflammation. Now, inflammation is a tricky word. An infection, red and oozing with pus, is obviously an inflammation. But cells not functioning normally, whatever that means, can also be inflamed. Additionally, stress on the system causes oxidative stress. Obesity, diabetes, metabolic disorder, and cardiovascular disease are stresses on the system and inflammation on the system. So the system responds by making more erythritol. In the in-depth discussion report, the January 1st one, they write that there are few clinical dietary studies on erythritol and cardiovascular health. They follow that with this, quote, an exception is a promising pilot study conducted in 24 patients with type 2 diabetes who consumed 26 grams per day of erythritol for 4 weeks. These patients exhibited reduced arterial stiffness and improved endothelial function. Endothelial dysfunction contributes to the pathogenesis of cardiovascular disease in type 2 diabetics and predicts cardiovascular events, end quote. I had to look up endothelial. The Cedars-Sinai website writes, quote, endothelial cells release substances that control vascular relaxation and contraction, as well as enzymes that control blood clotting, immune function, and platelet adhesion, end quote. Platelets are a colorless substance in the blood. Pathogenesis is the origin of disease. So, according to the January 1 report, erythritol can have positive effects for people at risk of or in type 2 diabetes and at risk of cardiovascular events. If I read that right, if I read all of this right, and I'll accept that is a big if in the body, erythritol production has a positive effect on arteries, erythritol production might be a response to a highly stressed body made to cope with the stress and makes more if there's more stress. Since the report that started all this shows they did not test dietary erythritol except for 4 hours in 8 people, too many questions exist with no answers. I learned more than a little bit by prepping for the show. What seems to be the real horror isn't news at all. The horror is CNN, but all the media really, showed us smoke and desperately, I'm projecting here, desperately wanted us to see fire. Fear and panic that food is going to kill you seems to be the message, and clicks and shares are the goal. To that end, it worked. It got me and dozens of other people talking about it. I looked for a video in support of this report. Now, it might be out there, but I didn't find it. Loads of folks are beating this up, but it really seems to be a nothing burger of a report. The authors have a few minutes ticked off of their allotted 15, and the talking heads who bashed this report got loads. I mean, some of them in the millions of YouTube plays, and they got to pitch their wares to a very willing and eager audience. The report and the responses is like a rugby scrum. Everyone is kicking at the wee story looking to gain control. What does all of this mean? I'm not certain, but I have some ideas. One thing it means is the news is not your friend. The massive news push of a story is for clicks. The more you hear about it, the more clicks it's expected to get. Someone is selling soap and somebody is making mad stacks. It means go find responses to the story. And let me tell you, that ain't easy. It's easy to get the big ones. You have to really hunt for some of them to get down into some more content. You've got to look through a dozen to find the parts that don't agree. I found plenty of content against this report, and not all of it was on the up and up. One doctor did a bait and switch. He started talking about the report, the February 27th one, and then switched to a conclusion seeming to claim the conclusion was from the report he was discussing. It wasn't. He mumbled something about and from this report, but he could have been very plain and he was not. The conclusion he referenced was from an article written 2 years ago. It had nothing to do with the February 27th report. Not a thing. Certainly, that was not a response to the article from this year, and certainly his presenting it as it could be, I think, is pretty, well, it's poor form. So what else do I think you should do? Probably attend less to the news and exercise. Go for a brisk walk. weather's turning nice in most places. Don't eat too much. Sugar probably isn't the Voldemort we've been told it is, but I'm pretty sure it's no Dumbledore either. The sugar problem is massively compounded by the partners it has in the foods it is in. Packaged goods contain ingredients that used to be food, but are processed to the point of being unidentifiable, wheat mostly, and seed oils and chemical preservatives and artificial colors are all mixed together to create products that are no damned good. Sugar is empty calories, and that's not good. But most of the crap that is sold as food containing sugar is also empty calories with pretty colors and fortified with the very things that were stripped out of it. If you want cookies, make them. Use butter, not margarine. If you want cake, make it. Use butter. If you want granola, make it. Use coconut oil. The takeaway is the thing I've been saying for a while. Granny was right. Eat real food. Now, I mentioned that maybe sugar isn't the supervillain we're expected to think it is. Being misheard on this will be easy. I am not suggesting sugar is a healthy food. Far from it. What I am saying is that given the near religious fervor attached to vilifying sugar, maybe there's something about it we're not being told. I know secrets were kept about sugar and lobbying and saturated fats and seed oils and salt. I am saying that there seems to be a lot of moving parts in the discussions about what makes us fat and unwell. To exclude all the other ingredients and be absolutely certain it is only sugar is something I don't know. I thought I did know. The massive uniform response to this unimpressive article makes me wonder if those people selling sugar as the sin of the ages might be doing so while laughing all the way to the Bitcoin. That's a banking joke. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll post a link to the text from this episode, which will be posted as a blog post. That post will have the links to some of the articles I mentioned. The February report is behind a paywall, so I can't add a link to that, but I will add a link to the CNN article. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you being here. Thanks also to the Patreon supporters. Patrons get access to the bonus content and to the chef's table portions from the various guests. Find the link to become a patron under the support heading on the show notes page. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.